Hey, welcome to the Local Spotlight Show here at WJBM Studios in Jerseyville, Illinois, the voice of the Tri-Counties. I'm Chris Lorden. I'm your host. With me, I have the famous Kevin McCarthy. Welcome, Kevin. How are you?
Chris, it might be more infamous than famous, I think, particularly here at home area, you know.
Well, but, I mean, you broadcast for on Camel X.
Yeah.
50,000 watts.
Yeah.
Heard all over
the world.
Yeah.
Literally.
Literally all over the world.
Yeah. We'd get three or four cassettes or cards a month from all over Europe. And we actually got one from Australia. And these guys knew what they were doing. They went out on top of some hill and put a long wire out and measured it so that it was with the frequency. But they had 45 minutes of KMOX. In Australia. That's just astonishing.
Yeah, they wanted it that bad.
Yeah.
You have roots here in the Tri-County.
Yeah, my grandparents from Kane. My mom graduated from Jerseyville High School. Grandma ran the restaurant in Kane for years. And okay. Also, Grandpa was a welder at Bogman, just west of here,
yeah,
of the studios. And my dad, at the age of 21, started working at the bank in Kane.
So,
And I've got aunts and uncles all over, the Perduns and the Dunhams and, you know, the Swans. And so, this is home.
And the Pros.
Yeah, and the Pros, yeah.
Third cousin to Brenda.
Yeah. Richard was my mom's uncle, and Lou Pro was my great-grandfather.
Now, you go by Kevin McCarthy because that you changed your name. It's your stage name, right?
Well, yeah,
or what
it
happened
is
there? Because your original name, born name, was Art
Welch.
Art Welch,
yeah.
Yes.
And, when I was working for HFC, they frowned on moonlighting. So I changed my name to be on the radio. And
Wasn't that you didn't like Art Welch.
No, that was a perfect radio name.
Yeah.
But no, and once they'd find me, I guess they recognized my voice, so I'd change stations and change my name again. And when I got to KS94 in about 1980, Ron Morgan said, well, I was going to use Kevin Corker, which was a friend of mine. Prior to that, I'd used my barber's name, who got me into this on a $5 bet. But he says, well, I got a friend in Dallas, Kevin McCarthy. Why don't you use that?
Yeah.
And when I got to KMOX, I asked Mr. Hyland. He said, no, that's fine. Keep using that. Everybody knows you use that.
So, yeah. Yeah.
And so that's how it ended up. Now, I do have on my driver's license both names.
Do you?
Yeah, I registered Kevin McCarthy with the state of Missouri as a doing business as, also known as, and because when I was doing work with stations in Europe and so on, they'd sometimes fly me over to do voice work and put the name Kevin McCarthy on it. And this was, again, before all the TSA and everything. So I had at least one ID that said Kevin McCarthy on it.
And, yes, I see.
So it stuck.
Well, It's a good one. It's a good name.
It's worked.
Yeah.
It's paid the rent for a few years.
It's better than a lot of other names that I've been called over the years.
Oh, likewise too, Chris. Yeah, yeah. Let's not go there.
Anyway, last episode we were talking Berlin Wall, Russia, and Ukraine. Just some insight because you've been over there. You've met the people, and your comment was that you didn't really ever think that the Russian people just hated Americans?
No, not at all. I never got that. I've been there four times. I've been to Ukraine. I've been to Israel twice, China twice, 44 different countries with our travel show. But politics is a dirty little thing. When I was in the Army, I ended up working at the embassy in Paris during the Vietnam peace talks. And was custodian of documents for the military liquidation section, which was a JAG lawyer and a colonel and a general trying to sell off all our brick and mortar properties, leases for power grids. You want to buy a bowling alley? We'll sell you one cheap. But That at the time was the largest funneling point, if you will, from Southeast Asia, Vietnam, for information. At that point, I saw what came in, or not all of it, but a lot of it, what was deemed top secret or whatever, and what was released to the public,
mm-hmm.
or the news wires, what the news wires, UP, API, et cetera, thought was newsworthy and or not, and didn't carry it, down to when I was working weekends at radio stations where, you know, you got your teletype newswire and would see stories come across that, well, the newsman couldn't pronounce Dien Bien Phu, so he didn't read that story.
I see.
Now, from starting point to dispersion to the public, and this is barring any political differences you might have.
Yeah.
Just the fact that as circumstances fell, what came in originally and what was disseminated on the radio or TV was far and away different. It was like playing that old parlor game, telephone or whatever.
Right.
You whisper something in somebody's ear and what comes out the other end is nowhere close.
It was like that then, and you think it's like that today?
Even more so. There are political biases now in almost all the media.
Was there that many political biases back when you were?
No.
There wasn't?
No. Everybody is trying to be their own Dan Rather or whatever, tied to a telephone pole in the middle of the hurricane when it's, you know, ankle-deep water. Who cares? But they are all trying to make stars and names for themselves. So if you notice, they don't ask questions anymore. They inject their opinions.
Yes. Yeah.
Sad situation.
Yeah. Do you think it'll change?
No.
You don't?
No, because now it's all tweets and emails and Facebook and so on, where there is absolutely no effort or ability really to control it. And people want everything in a 15-second soundbite or two paragraphs instead of listening to even one side, let alone both sides of a situation.
Russia and Ukraine, tell us what you think about that.
Well, if we would have had a president 4 or 5 years ago when Russia first came into Ukraine and did what we just did in Iran, we wouldn't be faced with what we are now.
Yeah.
Again, there's a lot of difference between the Russian people and their politicians. And Putin, ex-KGB, he wants to rebuild the Soviet Empire or the Russian Empire. He wants to be a czar. And for more intents and purposes, he is.
Yes.
It's his doing. It's not the people of Russia.
Yeah. And they can't get rid of him?
Not now.
Not now, no.
Yeah, and I think one of the real situations, too, again, having been there right after the wall came down, the West missed an opportunity, if you will, excuse me, to really set the bar higher in what is now Russia. They were screaming for democracy and stability, and the International Monetary Fund refused to stabilize the economy.
Mm-hmm.
And the mafia took it over quickly, and the politicians paid them, and vice versa. And that's where we are now.
Yeah.
I mean, again, they wanted democracy. They have it somewhat, but trying to change the oligarchy there now is very difficult.
What's your thoughts on what recently happened with the U.S. bombing Iran? Okay, taking out their...
Mm-hmm.
What do you think Russia is thinking right now? I mean, what's your thought? Russia, China, what do you think they're thinking about?
A new sheriff in town. That's basically it.
Yeah.
And the whole world is. And hallelujah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like I said, if we'd have done that when Russia first took over Crimea, and I think that area, what is called Crimea, the eastern part of the Ukraine, is predominantly very ethnic Russian. They should have sacrificed that portion, gave it to Russia, and said, that's it, you're done.
Yeah.
We didn't. And that's why we're faced with what we are now, 3 and 4 years later. And the same thing with Iran. I have been to Israel twice. I have been to Tel Aviv, Jerusalem, Beersheba, which just got bombed after the, quote, ceasefire, Haifa, Jaffa. Very open, very democratic, tolerating country. There are all types of religions and backgrounds, and that brings me to the point of religions. There are more, we've killed more people in the name of religion, whichever side you're on, than any war altogether in the world.
Yes.
We went to a little town. It was basically a Islamic settlement, but they had a Catholic church there that actually has the crypt of a crusader, you know, 1,500, 2,000 years ago.
Wow.
And we talked with the priest, and by the way, to raise funds, they raise lemon trees and make limoncello out of it, and it's pretty darn good. But I said, well, you know, we're sitting here in a Catholic churchyard, and literally across the street is an Islamic temple.
Yeah.
And do you guys get along? He says, yeah, we have no problems. We don't have bake sales together, but, you know, we live with each other. That's what Israel's all about. You'd go to the market, and there was, you know, Muslims and Christians and whoever, whatever, you know, gay people, whatever, and they get along. It's the politicians again.
Yep.
And you're dealing with a tolerant, democratic government, politicians in Israel. You are dealing with Middle Ages barbaric theologists in Iran.
Yeah.
Who have been blowing smoke at us for 50 years.
Yeah.
There's, this quote, ceasefire, if it holds, to me, that's just another of their delaying tactics. It's delaying it a little bit longer, but we've been played for ages, and we have not had a leadership here that would stand up to it. Rocky Sickman, one of the Marines that was at the embassy in Tehran when the revolution started, was 440-some days in captivity. I've talked with him a lot about this.
Okay.
What a great guy.
Yeah.
I think he's just retired now from Anheuser-Busch. But these guys that are in control there, again, do not represent the mindset of the people of Iran.
Well, I've heard that over the news.
It's fact.
Yeah.
But how do you, I think we stopped too soon. I'm not a warmonger, but I think we and, well, not so much we, but Israel should have been allowed to finish the job, if you will. And I don't think they finished it.
Hey, if you're just joining us, I have Kevin McCarthy, the infamous KMOX broadcaster.
Thanks, Chris.
Anyway, Kevin, okay, we'll leave that. Thanks for your
let's have some more
thanks
fun.
Thanks for your insight. Let's talk about some of the famous people that you've interviewed and had relationships over the years.
Oh my goodness.
I think people get a kick out of it. I know we can't do all of them.
Yeah, but, that'd take forever.
Yeah, but
basically anybody that had a hit song in the 80s, 90s, or 70s, I've been with them somewhere along the line.
Okay. George Martin, first of all,
yeah.
So the listeners know, who is George Martin? How do you know him?
He was a Beatles producer. He did all of the engineering, recording, mixing, etc. of the Beatles albums.
Did he find the Beatles?
He was working at the studios in Abbey Road, which was where they were recording. So basically, they came together as an assignment. And a little background on Mr. Martin, Sir George Martin, by the way, he's been knighted. Classical pianist and jazz pianist.
I see.
But he had a unique ear. And the Beatles wrote a lot of songs and a lot of good songs.
They were a phenomenon.
Oh, yeah, in a period of 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
Going from basically, if you listen to the early Beatles album, they're country western.
Okay, I have to do that.
And then, just take a listen to some of, not I Want to Hold Your Hand, but up to classical Hey Jude and so on.
Yeah, okay.
Once I got to interview George Martin at the Cannes Film or Medium Festival, and I was supposed to have about a 10-minute interview. It ended up being probably close to an hour. And one of the things that today, Rolling Stone magazine, etc., the recordings of Sgt. Pepper's album is a world-class effort that couldn't be done now, I don't think, by someone with a four-track recorder. Now, okay. Les Paul did overdubs and so on in his guitar work with Les Paul and Mary Ford, but most recordings were done on what they call a two-track or stereo. They didn't call it, it wasn't stereo left and right, it was just two tracks of tape recorders. George had a four-track, and all of the overdubs and mixes and so on, most engineers would be hard-pressed to recreate that on a computer with 200 tracks. And he did it with a four-track recorder. And I said, you really did it on a four-track recorder? And his comment was, well, it's all we had, wasn't it? Bingo. But one story he told me, he said he came into the studio and the Beatles would be there sometimes all night and not during the day or vice versa. He came in about 6 a.m. and they were all standing around in a little aquarium in the lobby.
Yeah.
And he says, what are you doing? And they split outside and looked. He had a Neumann microphone, for our listeners, is $5,000 and up, you know, to $20,000, $30,000, $40,000. They had one of his Neumann microphones in a milk jug underwater in the aquarium to see what kind of sound they could produce. And that's the Beatles, that was their expertise, if you will, or ability to adjust sounds, change them, combine them to what you hear now on all of their records. With, and people will be
with primitive equipment to work with.
Oh, yeah. Today, a garage band wouldn't even consider it.
Yeah. Okay, how about Barry Manilow?
Oh, that's a good one. I got a call. He had played at the Checkerdome then, and I got a call from Mr. Hyland's secretary on Sunday morning. You need to come down and interview Barry Manilow. Do I have to? He had the reputation of being a real pain in the butt with media.
Okay.
Just a jerk. Yeah. Okay. Mr. Hyland wants you to come down and, okay, I'm on the way. Got dressed, went down to the studios. He was there in his purple leather jumpsuit from the night before and thanked me for coming in. I said, well, not a problem. I was told to do so. I said, I do hope that we have a pretty good interview because I think you know you have a reputation of being a jerk with the media.
You told him that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I wasn't real happy about this, and I wasn't going to tolerate it. I don't suffer fools lightly, okay?
You're setting him straight, right?
Yeah, and he says, I understand, and you're right. He says, but that's changed. I said, oh, really? How? My manager stole all my money, and I'm basically starting over, so whatever you want to do is fine with me. And we ended up with about a half an hour interview. I said, so you're the piano man. And he says, actually, I started with the accordion. I said, oh, really? He says, yeah, Jewish mother, I had to play the accordion.
I'll be darned.
I said, well, why don't you wear your watch on your right arm? Which I do.
Yeah.
And he says, did you play the accordion? I said, yeah, I wanted to. My aunt in Kane, I was staying with my grandparents while mom and dad were at some convention or something. And within a week's time, I had learned by ear all of the accordion things that she was taking lessons for. And I was about 5 years old and wanted to play accordion. And I did. I took lessons and played till I was about 13 and realized my love life wasn't going anywhere with the accordion. So
switched to a guitar.
Drums.
Okay.
Yeah. But he says, well, you played the accordion. You're not Jewish. And I said, no, I really wanted to. It was a great interview. Yeah.
Good. How about Bon Jovi?
Oh, that's my kid brother. We were doing it. We wanted to do a concert or some type of charity thing. There was a young teen in St. Louis who needed a liver transplant from a almost destitute family. But we didn't want to do it for one individual. So we said, well, we called it the Concert for a Cause. And we ended up doing for her, Shriners Hospital for Crippled Children. Now it's just Shriners Children's Hospital. And Operation Liftoff, which was TWA employees who would fly children who were seriously terminally ill or needed treatment somewhere else free of charge. Kind of like, what is it, Operation Hope, Provide Hope or whatever. No, it was, you know, now, but it was strictly TWA employees. It was open to anybody. So what are we going to do? We're going to have a Battle of the Bands concert? Well, that sounded good, except that we were doing a promotion with the St. Louis County Parks 3 nights a week with the house band Candy Band. And they would, I mean, 700-800 teenagers, 1,000 teenagers every night just wow. dancing themselves silly. And if they don't win the Battle of the Bands, our summer promotion's over. Yeah. And we can't fix the contest. So I was music director at the time for KHTR as well as on air. And I asked one of the record guys, I said, have you got anybody, a band on the way down or up that might play for free or at least cheap? Yeah. And this was his last day on the job. He says, here's Bon Jovi's number, their manager's number. Give him a call, but don't tell him I gave you the number. And they came in and played for absolute free.
I'll be darned.
TWA flew them in. Backstage towels were from the football Cardinals. 905 Liquor provided the backstage bar. I mean, everything was donated. And the IBEW, IB's Economically yeah. Wealthy, the Electricians Union, donated. It's as long as you don't go overtime. You go overtime, you're going to pay for the overtime. I said, deal. You know, I want to go home early anyway. And Stagehands Local, number two, they've been around forever, said, well, we'll think about doing a donation or so on, but in the meantime, you're going to have to pay the stagehands. All right. And the day before the concert, they called and said, by the way, we should probably tell you, every vehicle that pulls up and unloads is $50. I said, okay, thank you. And we had three or four local bands. So, you know, mom and dad in the station wagon were pulling up with a guitar and amplifier or a set of drums or whatever. Right. I said, this is absurd. So I called Hertz Rental and got a 40-foot trailer truck. And we met at Northwest Plaza at 6 in the morning. And by the time we were done, you couldn't stuff a piece of paper into that trailer truck. I mean, all the lights, lighting, sound equipment, stage amplifier, you know, PA sets, everything was in that truck. And we backed up to the backstage of Kiel, and I said, here's $50, boys, hit it. We did not get a donation from the stagehands, but yeah. Well, and since then, he's done many benefit concerts, and the whole band, just a great bunch of guys.
Yeah.
I've been in their bus. I've been in their hotel rooms. I've traveled with them overseas. Never saw any dope. They like tequila and vodka, and so do I. But, you know, just super guys. And I don't agree with his politics sometimes, but that's what makes America great, isn't
it? That's right. Freedom of choice.
Yeah.
Kevin, it's been great having you in the studio. But we've ran out of time.
Again. Oh, darn.
But thanks for coming in, and I hope to have you back.
Anytime.
All right.
Anytime. And if you need any voice work or anything, I'm still doing that all over the world. A couple stations in Spain, the Netherlands, and so on. So,
well, thanks so much.
It's been a pleasure.